I think I'll go ahead at this point. Just want to take a few minutes to introduce our guest speaker to you, although I know she's familiar to many of you because she's generously visited with us on many occasions at this point. Jean Leonard is a licensed psychologist and certified mindful self-compassion teacher in practice in Louisville, Colorado. She's practiced Vipassana meditation since 2003. And teaches mindfulness classes and mentors mindfulness teachers who are currently training through Jack Kornfield and Tara Brock's MMTCP program. Her teaching style is influenced by Jack and Tara, James Beres, Gil Fronsdal, and Tanisara and Kittisaro. Jean is currently participating in a year-long training to become a Buddhist eco-chaplain, and has a particular interest in offering emotional and spiritual support to individuals and communities impacted by the environmental and ecological crises of our times, and practice related to aging, illness, and dying. Jean, thanks for joining us once again. Go ahead and unmute if you would.
Thank you, David. How's the sound?
It sounds just fine.
Great. Great. I'd like to begin with a poem this evening. And it's a poem entitled Belonging by Rosemary Wotolla Tromer. And if it's true, we are alone together. The way blades of grass are alone, but exist as a field. Sometimes I feel it, the green fuse that ignites us, the wild thrum that unites us, an inner hum that reminds us of our shared humanity. Just as 35 trillion red blood cells join in one body to become one blood, just as 136,000 notes make up one symphony, alone as we are, our small voices weave into the one big conversation. Our actions are essential to the one infinite story of what it is to be alive. When we feel alone, we belong to the grand communion of those who sometimes feel alone. We are the dust that hopes, a rising of dust, a pitch of dust. The dust that dances in the light with all other dust. The dust that makes the world. I was touched that David started with that beautiful reading or quote from Mark Nepo about the one heart. You know, it feels on a night like tonight to start with belonging. And if you wish, I know many of us have Zoom fatigue and we like to not have our cameras on, but I might invite those of you who are willing to, even just for a minute, to turn on your cameras and to look at the beautiful beings who are gathered here tonight. You know, to see familiar faces, to look into people's eyes, to receive smiles if they are present. You know, human beings have gathered actually often around fire for millennia to laugh together, to cry together, to eat, to tell stories, and we are gathered here tonight to grieve what's been lost, to express gratitude for what's still here, and to feel the care and the comfort that comes from the connection of being in community. We're here to begin to heal, and I think it can be deeply healing to literally see that we're not alone. And taking this in and holding these beings in your heart as we sit together and being held, if it feels more nourishing, more supportive for your nervous system to turn your camera off now, I really honor that. And thank you for checking in. It warms my heart to see many familiar faces and names. And it's a real joy and honor to be sitting with you in this tender time. You know, the fire element is a good friend. It provides light and heat, a hearth to gather around. And as we so painfully experienced just a few days ago, it is a formidable force that under the right or the wrong conditions can cause unbelievable damage. And I imagine many of you, like me, are probably in shock from the fires of a few days ago. I know as my household sat in the pre-evacuation zone preparing to leave, gifted a little time in a way that so many were not, I looked around my house and I wondered, you know, what do I take? What does one pick up from a life and carry with you? And in the days since, I have repeatedly been reflecting on what is home? What is home? Because I know that there are many people asking that question right now as their homes have been lost. And there's many ways to answer that. There's many ways that home's experienced. You know, home is a place. It's a physical space and structure that shelters us. It's a place to gather. Home is a place of refuge and safety and rest. It holds treasured mementos and memories. Home is a reflection of who we are in many ways. What we love, what's important to us, what we find beautiful. You know, in these 2 years of COVID, home has often also been a schoolroom, a workplace. Yeah. Home is also people. It's connection. I have a number of friends who lost their homes, and in communications with them, they've been expressing many things amongst their sentiments is a sense of gratitude and a sense that home is their people. It's their children, their family, their pets, if they were fortunate enough to gather their furry family members and escape with them. For many, home extends beyond their own personal four walls to community, you know, favorite places, neighborhood streets and stores, coffee shops, hikes, vistas, views, beloved trees and gardens. Home is nature, this more than human world and all the creatures that share this land with us that were also impacted. Home is routine and rhythm and ritual. Fiona Apple has this great quote, "Home is where my habits have a habitat." Home is where my habits have a habitat.
Thank you, telephone. Yes. I'm not getting any sound now. I fiddle around with the sound.
I'm just going to pause and check. I'm hearing some comments.
Jean, I'm going to mute everybody and then ask you to unmute, okay?
Well, I'm trying to do whatever I can.
Okay, why don't you go ahead and unmute? You need to unmute.
I just did. Let's see if that worked.
It worked.
Okay. Great. Did you miss a chunk, or was it one particular person who missed?
Go ahead and rewind one sentence and you keep going.
Okay. I just love this. You know, it's like this, right? It's so beautiful that there's never anything that's out of place, right? It's all just the next moment, the next imperfection, you know, this life, as Ruth King says, it's not perfect, not permanent, and not personal. So I was reflecting, maybe sharing the quote by Fiona Apple that I really like about what's home. And she says, home is where my habits have a habitat. So home is where we live, right? It's where we do our living. And for many with these recent fires, there's this tremendous sense of tenderness that I'm hearing for this earth, our shared home, this beautiful planet, you know, that's seeing more and more of these extreme events as a result of climate destabilization. So home is so precious, so precious. So what do we do when our home is threatened, destabilized, damaged, destroyed? And as I've been having the great honor of sitting with people these last couple of days, you know, I've been hearing people have many different feelings, many different experiences, and there's likely many experiences right here in this circle, in this room tonight. You know, some of you may have lost your homes, and I'm so, so sorry. Some of you may be returning to homes or neighborhoods that are damaged. Some of you may know those who have been directly affected, so there's just one degree of separation. Some of you may have escaped direct damage and are yearning to help. You know, some of you may be trembling with fear and aching for the pain of what this local event means for what's happening on the planet as a whole. You know, and in each of these situations, there might be a whole range of feelings that are showing up. Shock, grief, loss, fear, anger, confusion, overwhelm, despair, helplessness, guilt, relief, gratitude, and any feeling you could possibly be having right now is natural, normal, appropriate. You know, to borrow from Tara Brach, she often says, this belongs. And in a in response to an event like this, it all belongs. Nothing is out of place. You know, there's no right way to experience a natural disaster. There's just your way, and your way may change moment by moment, day to day, week by week. You know, for most of us, this may be uncharted territory. For some of us, this may be territory we've walked before. I've sat with folks who this is not their first natural disaster, and so that experience too may be in the room. And the truth is, no matter where you're sitting, we've all been affected by this. This is a community level trauma, and it's not our first one, right? Boulder County has had a hard year. And that word trauma can feel really big. It can feel really scary to many of us. But it's also informative. It's a helpful framing. In simple terms, trauma could be thought of as too much, too soon, too much for too long, or not enough for too long. So too much, too soon, too much for too long, or not enough for too long. And what happened a few days ago is definitely too much. Too soon, too fast. You know, and this is nested in the last few years of a combination, I think, of too much and not enough for too long. You know, too much stress, too much uncertainty, too much isolation, not enough connection, not enough joy, perhaps. So there's a lot of stress in our systems. And a distinguishing element of trauma is that typically we have no choice about what's happening to us, what's happening around us. And clearly none of us had any choice about 110-mile winds or a fire or what happened. And so what I'd like to bring together this evening with you is some of what I know from my long experience as a meditator, as a psychologist, and to hopefully gift you some very practical practices to remind you perhaps of really what you already know, and to also offer a few loving modifications that can sometimes be particularly helpful for our meditation practice when something this intense has happened. So as I sit with people in these early days, you know, what I'm seeing, one of the things I'm seeing is that it's compassionate and skillful to be listening to and attending to our nervous system with great care. You know, when we're in a state of overwhelm, we don't function optimally. It's hard to make decisions. It's hard to navigate day-to-day responsibilities. It's hard to navigate a natural disaster with inside a stressed out nervous system. I had a conversation with someone today who had reached out and left a message saying that their home was in ashes and they were looking for support. And the first thing I did, you know, I could hear the tears just like leaking through the phone the minute they heard my voice. And I said, you know, let's just sit. Let's just sit together. Just take a few breaths. Feel your feet on the floor. Like there's no rush. There's no rush. And we just sat together for just a minute or two, breathing, breathing. You know, and I said to this person something like, I bet you have this long list of all these people you're calling and all these things you're trying to attend to. And even though there might be really kind people on the other end of those phone calls, and you're getting things done and you're receiving help, there's probably not a lot of space for you just to be tearful for a few minutes, you know, to just be. And I could also hear the settling through the phone, you know, just the gift of a minute or two that we might be able to offer someone, that we might be able to offer ourselves. You know, the overwhelmed mind is not well designed to complete government paperwork that's part of recovering from a natural disaster, or to navigate complex systems like FEMA and, you know, getting documents reissued and all kinds of things that people are facing. And when we are overwhelmed, we can't back ourselves out of overwhelm. We often try, you know, we reach overwhelm and we think, if I just dial it back, I will be a productive, functioning human being. And actually what our nervous system needs, and our practice is so beautiful in supporting this, in these moments, it's essential that we pause to offer support, to calm the nervous system, you know, to consider what brings you back to a sense of safety, settling, stability, a tiny measure of comfort or reassurance. So it might be pausing for a few breaths, like I did with this person. It might be feeling the soles of your feet on the earth, like I invited this person to do, you know. It might be pausing to move the body and go for a walk, petting an animal, maybe watching a stupid sitcom, yeah, taking a bath, calling a friend, taking a nap. There's a lot of exhaustion and overwhelm. And these gestures of tactile comfort and behavioral self-compassion, they help soothe emotional activation. And this too is meditation practice. What I'm talking about is actually not different than what we do on the cushion. This is practice off the cushion. This is kind awareness to what's here and what needs tending to. You know, this is often the kind of practice that we need in moments like this. You know, the title I had offered David for this talk was Home, Finding a Refuge Amidst the Rubble. You know, home. Finding a refuge amidst the rubble. And we're offered a map in our practice to a different kind of home. It's an internal home, you know, which in no way erases the pain of losing an external home. You know, it's really important to not hold practice almost as a weapon. Sometimes I think we do in difficult times. Like, if I was just a good practitioner, I wouldn't feel so bad right now. That's not what this is about. Touching into this internal home that practice can offer us can provide a measure of support, of stability in the face of such loss. And this internal home actually reflects many of those qualities that I mentioned a few minutes ago, the things that make home so special. You know, this internal home can be a place of safety, of rest, of refuge, of connection, routine and rhythm and ritual. This internal home can bring a sense of community and also nature. You know, it's a pathway back to the larger circle of belonging. In the last couple of days, I was moved to reread the opening of the Satipatthana Sutta. Some of you know the suttas, the teaching stories of the Buddha, and this one is quite well known, and it's the teaching on the four foundations of mindfulness, or the four establishments of mindfulness. It really takes us back to the basics in many ways. And there's this one line that I want to share with you. It says, it begins with this honorific, or this greeting of bhikkhus, and that's a Pali word that some of you are familiar with. It refers to monks. And really, in my heart, it refers to all of us here, all of us in this circle. And the translation that I hold in my heart when I hear that word bhikkhus is this: it's beloved practitioners. So I offer that to each of you. This next sentence is for you, beloved practitioners. And what the sutta says is, this is the direct path for the purification of beings, the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of pain and grief, for the attainment of the true way, for the realization of Nibbana, namely the four foundations of mindfulness. And I was so struck reading that, actually comforted by this great gift that this path that's offered in our tradition for practice, a path for overcoming sorrow and lamentation, to support the disappearance of pain. Of grief, right? And isn't that where we're all sitting right now? Amidst sorrow, lamentation, grief, and pain. And this path offers us a gateway to Nibbana. You know, that's a big word too. And it really, what it's pointing to is something not out there, not something big, not enlightenment with the big E. It's pointing us to the moments of peace, the moments of steadiness that we might touch here amidst the rubble. We don't have to go anywhere else. It's like these tiny moments that start to be stepping stones through the grief, through the pain, that can help sustain us. And so practice can help us in so many ways, but given that we're all probably sitting in somewhat stressed nervous systems right now, I want to keep it simple. And I'd like to look at three ways that practice can be helpful in these circumstances. Again, this is probably nothing new, but repetition in particular is helpful, right? It's part of that rhythm, that routine that can bring us home to the moment to a sense of self, to each other, to a sense of home. And so practice, if I were to summarize it in three words, it offers us simplicity, stability, and support. Simplicity, stability, and support. Simplicity, right? A natural disaster is filled with complexity. And so practice offers us many ways of gathering our attention to just here, just here, to this moment, to this experience, to the life within us right here. And the teaching of the Four Foundations offers many options for what here might be. Many anchors, places to bring our kind awareness, to bring our mindfulness. And what's an anchor? You know, if you think about it, an anchor is steadying, right? It's what holds a ship in a harbor. It is a place to come home to. And simplicity also, I think, invites us really to stay with just the first foundation, often, with the body, the foundation of the body, the breath, the body, in some way, which allows for stability, that second ingredient, stability, right? So trauma activation, or in more colloquial terms, overwhelm, often takes us into the past or future. So I'm sitting with people and it's like, how can you not replay or wonder, what if the snow had come a day earlier? Or thinking about replaying, you know, what happened, what it was like to evacuate, or overwhelm takes us into thinking about all that's been lost that was there just 4 days ago. Or it takes us into the future, wondering, worrying, oh my God, am I going to, you know, reach the insurance today? Are we going to get a check anytime soon? How am I going to navigate, you know, getting the kids clothed and fed and to school next, you know, tomorrow or next week? And so there's this way that we get scattered and fragmented in trauma. Trauma is a fragmentation. And so the physical body always inhabits the present. Even when the present's difficult, the physical body can be a direct pathway. It can be an anchor into the present moment that helps bring us home. It can be an ally in helping us ground when we're overwhelmed. And we need support. And practice offers us this too, through the gift of Sangha. Many of you, most of you probably know that word. That beautiful Pali word that is the word for community. Because we cannot rebuild our lives or our community alone. We need each other. This is the power of engaged Buddhism, of practice in action. The word act is right in the middle of the word practice. Have you ever noticed that? It's right there in the middle. Our practice invites us to act. We don't engage in this practice to become Olympic cushion sitters. You know, we engage in this practice to be fully alive, and to be fully alive is to be engaged, is to act. The Buddha taught and acted out of care for the world. There's this word that's in the suttas. It's often what you see in the suttas translated is compassion. He acted out of compassion, which we often associate with that word karuna that many of you know, the karuna or compassion practice. But in the suttas, the word that actually shows up most of the time related to what motivated the Buddha to teach is a different word. It's actually this word anukampa, which might most accurately be translated as care. Care, a care for the well-being of the world. And we are called to act out of care for the world in moments like this. Over the holidays, I had this gift of watching It's a Wonderful Life with my partner and his 20-year-old son. And his son had never seen It's a Wonderful Life. So it was actually such a sweet experience to watch this movie with someone, seeing it with beginner's eyes. And at the end of the movie, I just love it, he jumped up and he said, "That is the best Christmas movie I've ever seen," which I totally concur. Whether or not you celebrate Christmas, I just have this deep love for Jimmy Stewart and this movie. And he said, "That's what the spirit of Christmas should be." Yeah. And I love the teaching of this movie. It feels like such a deep Dharma teaching about community, about Sangha, about connection. You know, the way that we are interdependent in ways that we have no idea. And there's this magic to it. And as I was reflecting on what's just happened to our beloved community, what strikes me is that we all have an opportunity to live a wonderful life in moments like this. In moments of crisis, it's an opportunity to open our hearts, to recognize the web of connection that's woven between us, and to participate in the circle of generosity, the flow of giving and receiving that is life. You know, as I reflect on the fire and how close it came, you know, to my home, to so many people's homes, it could have been any one of us given the whim of the wind that day. Yeah. And we're all impacted by what's happening to the earth, this planet that's our precious shared home. And so this is an opportunity to just see the best, to experience the best, to feel the goodness. And it's already happening. And I'll just share a few beautiful stories. You know, I've been nourishing myself by just looking for the good, or looking for the helpers, like Mr. Rogers, one of our other great teachers, you know, used to say, look for the helpers. So I saw this posting on Nextdoor a day or so ago, and it was from someone to a woman named Megan. And, you know, this woman, Megan, had really gone out of her way and been an angel to rescue horses that were in the Spanish Hills neighborhood. And just a line from this person's writing, "I cannot tell you how grateful I am and completely in awe of your heroic efforts. There are no words to describe the heartache so many people are feeling. Lives are changed forever but you brought a ray of sunshine to these horses and their frantic, loving owners. And, you know, in the complexity of all of this, too, I've been sitting with people who are wrestling with being one of the fortunate ones. And I wanted to share this, just a line or two that came from an email from a friend who lost her home back in 2018 in the Camp Fire, which some of you may remember was the deadliest, most destructive fire in California history. And there was great loss of life and land and structures. And there's some overlap to what just happened here in that it was in, you know, a town. It wasn't all rural and, you know, the town of Paradise. And there was drought and there was wind. And one of the things was that the bulk of the damage happened in the first 4 hours of that fire. And this is what she says. From my perspective, those who lost everything are grateful for anyone who was spared. I know that it was kindness and generosity which got me through the loss of my home and community from a fire. That and the great good fortune of having good fire insurance. May all impacted by this fire experience kindness, generosity, and adequate financial assistance. May all find shelter. May all beings find peace. So, you know, we have this opportunity to gift each other kindness, and it is what heals. So just one more brief share, and then I'd like to offer some practical ways of practicing. It's a part of a poem, another one by Rosemary Wotola Tromer, entitled Physics of Grief. And Rosemary Wotola Tromer has been writing a lot about grief. She's experienced several significant losses in her life this year, and I feel like she just really speaks straight to the heart. And this is one stanza in this poem. Before I could feel grief's full weight, love came to meet it, and though love did not take away the grief, not even one picogram, it dispersed the grief into its smallest bits, as if to increase the surface area interface. So now, every single atom of grief is surrounded, is cushioned by love. Every single atom of grief is cushioned by love. So what if this is what we could offer each other? What if this is what we could gift those who have lost everything, and allow that cushioning to soften, you know, to offer a soft landing for all of us in the midst of the rubble. What I'd love to do, if you're willing to explore with me, I'd love to take just a few minutes and guide us in a short practice, and to weave into this practice some elements, some modifications that I'll talk about afterwards that can be particularly helpful when trying to meditate in the midst of a crisis. So I invite you to sit comfortably and to actually begin this practice with your eyes open. We often close our eyes in practice, and that can be really helpful, and sometimes in a crisis it's not. So I invite you to actually look around the space that you're sitting in and to just orient. Let your eyes drink in the room, the objects that are there. You might even silently say to yourself or name 5 things you can see in the room where you are. You know, they might be quite simple, like floor, chair, door, plant, computer. And as you look around, I invite you to also look behind you. Let yourself look over one shoulder. And actually, if it works in your body, turn your neck so that you're engaging the muscles of your neck, and you might even invite your hips to turn ever so slightly, you know, just to engage those muscles of the hip, to look behind you over one shoulder, to look forward again, and then to look over the other shoulder, again engaging muscles of the neck and the hips. You know, we are animals and we live in an animal body. And even though we're sitting here in a circle of Sangha and the mind might say we're safe, the animal body doesn't always know that. So this looking around and especially looking behind you, because danger in the animal world often comes from behind. And then, if you wish, you know, settling in to a comfortable position and simplifying. And simplifying might be just gazing forward. It might be softening the gaze downward, but eyes open. Or it could be that closing your eyes feels most steadying and supportive. You choose. You choose. And then taking 3 breaths. Maybe slightly deeper breaths. Maybe even slightly slower breaths. Feeling the nourishment of the inhale. And the relaxing of the exhale. And as you're breathing, it might even happen spontaneously. There might be a little rocking in the body that starts to happen, almost as if you're in a rocking chair. You know, forward and back. Often the nervous system is soothed by rocking, and sometimes the body brings this in spontaneously. But if it doesn't and you want to try to just add in a little rocking and see how it feels, you're welcome to do so. Again, you choose. And you might feel the points of contact where your body is met and supported. Your butt on the chair, the soles of your feet on the floor. You might even wiggle your toes or move your feet a little bit to enliven the awareness down there, to invite the awareness down into the solidity of feet resting on the earth. And as you sit here, you know, you might become aware that there's something present. You know, there might be a lingering attention from the day. There might be some anxiety, maybe something that's there because you can hear the wind outside. Maybe there's some sadness or overwhelm. So just taking a breath and just acknowledging this, maybe even naming it, like, oh, I'm really feeling scared right now. This has been a hard day. And taking another breath and recognizing you're not the only one. There's a lot of common humanity in this experience. Yeah. Oh. There's a lot of people in Boulder County who are probably struggling today. There's a lot of people who are sitting in uncertainty, just like me. And taking a final breath and maybe offering yourself a little kindness. Maybe it's a hand to your heart if that feels comforting. Maybe it's a little wish. May I be free from fear for just a moment. May I find the courage to face this. Or you might even want to widen the circle of kindness and just send a wish to everyone in this circle, everyone in Boulder County. May we know peace this evening. And gifting yourself one more deep breath and maybe a little stretch or movement in the body. Movement is also just such a gift to the strange nervous system. And if your eyes were softened downward or they were closed, you might choose to open them. And come back and just feel what's here in your system, having paused in this way. Maybe checking in with, you know, what, if anything, in there, in that mix worked for you. Maybe something did, maybe something didn't. You know, to offer a few reflections on what was in there and what might be helpful, what you might want to consider in the coming days as you practice, because I know so many of you find great support in your meditation practice. And what I have found personally in my own practice and what I have seen repeatedly for clients and for students is during times of crisis, it's not uncommon for people to feel like my meditation's not working anymore. You know, I can't ground. I can't get calm. I can't, you know, concentrate. I can't sit. And if this is the case, you're not alone. And I encourage you, you know, to experiment, to be creative, and to know it's okay. It's okay. There's not one right way to practice. And as I shared earlier, you know, trauma involves having no choice about what's happening to us or around us. So finding ways to invite choice into our meditation practice, our daily practice, is really helpful. So, you know, do you want to practice with your eyes open or closed? Might you prefer a moving meditation instead of sitting? Would it help to sit for shorter periods of time? Do you need a different anchor besides the breath? Maybe it's the soles of the feet. Maybe it's listening to sounds in the room. Maybe it's just informal practice, you know, mindfully brushing your teeth or taking a shower and really enjoying it, allowing there to be moments of comfort or routine or familiarity that can be grounding. Maybe it's kindness practice in some form, you know, the Pali word metta, metta meditation, in any of its forms. So that question, what works for me, to come back to that again and again, and let the wisdom of your body and of the present moment guide your practice without trying to like squeeze yourself into the practice that you've always had, that you've always known. It may come back around to that familiar rhythm of practice, but you know, you might need something different now. The other pieces in what we just experienced was we do live in an animal body. So even if you're going to sit, and I've been playing with this in myself again the last few days, looking behind you speaks to the deep brain, to the animal body in a way that sometimes allows sitting to happen. So you might add that in. You might try that out. You know, we live in an animal body. We don't react in a rational way. I found myself jittery all day because it was windy. And I, you know, the body knows. These are some of the same sounds that I spent all of Thursday listening to. So tending to the animal body. And then also in moments of overwhelm, sensory clarity can bring stability. So if you're overwhelmed, pausing and taking a few breaths and looking around, naming some five things you can see, naming five things you can hear, can often settle you. And I also just want to acknowledge, you know, if you're experiencing distress and overwhelm, that's normal, that's natural, who would not be? And if that starts to impact your physical, emotional, social, you know, work or educational functioning, please don't hesitate to reach out to someone. There are many, many resources available right now for support and counseling. If I were sitting with you beautiful people in person, I would have a handout to gift you of what we just talked about and the practices and with some resources. And I'm not sitting with you in person, but I am almost done creating a web page on my website with resources, with suggestions for tending to your emotional well-being in response to the fires. I'm trying to summarize and curate some of the best resources for support, both practical and emotional. If you want to find that, I'll put my website address in the chat in just a moment. You are welcome to check there. There will be links, and I'm hoping to put a few guided practices up there as well with some of these that if they're a support for you, please feel free to access. And and I want to close with one final poem to this one, I think is, right here. One final poem to remind us of our capacity as humans for profound resilience. It's a beautiful poem entitled Brokenness by Rishani. There is a brokenness out of which comes the unbroken, a shatteredness out of which blooms the unshatterable, There is a sorrow beyond all grief which leads to joy, and a fragility out of whose depths emerges strength. There is a hollow space too vast for words, through which we pass with each loss, out of whose darkness we are sanctioned into being. There is a cry deeper than sound, whose serrated edges cut the heart as we break open to the place inside, which is unbreakable and whole while we are learning to sing. So let's just sit for a few breaths. Eyes open or eyes closed, whatever your nervous system says is the most supportive, the most stabilizing. Feeling whatever's here, this belongs. Feeling the goodness of the web that connects us. The possibility to each live a wonderful life of generosity, kindness, care. To wrap the atoms of grief in love. May any benefit from our time here together this evening be nourishment that's carried forward and spread throughout the web of connection, offering simplicity, stability, and support to all those in our community, human and in the more than human world. May all beings know peace, ease, freedom, and love. May it be so. Thank you for just the deep honor of being able to sit with each and every one of you.
Jane, thank you for your very compassionate and helpful words. There's a question in the chat from someone who would like the title of one of Rosemary's poems that you read.
Ah, sure. Do you know which one? So I read a couple of them. I read Belonging at the beginning, and I read a stanza from Physics of Grief.
That's the one.
Great.
Juliet's Physics of Grief. Yeah?
Yeah, and I did just put my website address in the chat if anyone feels it would be of benefit to access a summary of some of what I talked about tonight so that your stressed and nervous systems don't have to try to remember. And it will probably be up by the end of this week or this weekend, and it'll be on the front page of my website. There'll be a link. Right there.
One other thing, Jane, that might be helpful is that I'll be sending you the audio file for this talk.
Yes.
And if anyone wants to either hear it again or share it with someone they're close to or connected to, would you be okay with them contacting you about that?
Absolutely. And actually, what I'll do is I'll just add it to the page and people can then freely listen or share. It's just a gift. You can share it with anybody you think might benefit from tonight.
Wonderful. Well, by way of closing, let me just invite anyone who's present who would like to unmute and share a few words, come off the screen and become three-dimensional, to bring our evening to a close. Don't feel like you should do that, but if you have something you'd like to say that would help bring our evening to closure, please feel free to unmute and to do that.
Jean, I just want to say thank you so much. That was such a beautiful, integrated, deep, and helpful talk. And I can tell that you put a lot of your knowledge, heart, and wisdom into this. And I so appreciate your efforts. And it it is helpful to me now, and I'm certain it will be helpful to me in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine. Yeah. Well, I hope all of you take really good care. I had no idea when I was signed up to be the speaker on this particular night that this would be the context, but I actually feel so deeply honored, and I just wish each of you so much ease and safety and well-being, however you've been impacted.
Well, there's a comment in the chat, Jean, expressing appreciation from someone who felt deeply touched by what you shared.
Oh, thank you.
If there's no other comments at this point, I will go ahead and close the meeting. And I would simply add to Jean's comments, please be safe and take good care. And let's stick together as we find our way through this particular situation. Everyone be well. Blessings.
Thank you.